Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Helen DeSepa. How are you, Helen?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. We're in Saint-Emilion at the moment, in just on the plateau, in Grand Cru Vineyard of La Croisie. We're in your vineyard, very nice modern winery with a beautiful view overlooking the vineyards. It's absolutely gorgeous here.
Thank you. But
you guys are a family who own a number of vineyards around Bordeaux, a couple of Saint-Emilion, Bordeaux Superior. So today we're just going to talk a wee bit about your vineyards, a bit about the company as well, mm-hmm. and maybe taste some of your Saint-Emilion wines as well. Your winemaker, Jean-Michel, is going to join us later on for that.
Hopefully,
if he
gets back from the railway station.
Let's start off with a wee bit about you guys. Have you always been in Saint-Emilion?
Well, actually, it all started in Belgium. The family on my father's side has always been in the distilling industry. Mm-hmm. And so in 1938, my grandparents founded a company of spirits and liquors. And then later on, they concentrated on the importation of wine. I guess they started to get more and more passionate about wine because in 1950, they bought a first property in Bordeaux, and so in Saint-Emilion, which is Château Tourbalados.
Okay, and that's a Grand Cru Château as well?
And that's a Saint-Emilion Grand Cru, yes.
Okay. In fact, that's right next door to where we are now.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And so later on, I think they started to see the success of it, and they continued their adventure, as I can say, in Bordeaux, and they bought a second property, but that one was in Margaux, so on the other side of the other bank.
Yep.
And that was Château Breton-la-Rigaudière.
And that was what, 1964?
Exactly, 1964. And then the years went by. The company in Belgium became bigger and bigger. My father and his brother, little by little, they took over. And then until the 80s, when in 87 my uncle died, mm-hmm. and he was more actually managing the estates in Bordeaux. And so it was at that time that we hired a new manager who was Jean-Michel.
Okay.
So he's been with us in our family for more than 20 years.
Oh, okay.
And he helped my father managing the estates. And in those years, we bought some other properties. So in 94, we bought a chateau in Bordeaux Superior, which is Chateau Taillette. Mm-hmm. And later on, in 96, we bought Chateau La Croisie, so where we are now. And then the last one was in 2004, another Bordeaux Superior in the Médoc, Chateau La Concadio.
And how many hectares all up have you got?
So in total, there is 55 hectares.
So it's what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Five estates, yeah, 5 chateaus.
So they're all quite small then, average about 10 hectares.
Yes, yes, exactly, 10, 15. The smallest one is La Croisie, where we have 5 hectares.
Yeah.
So we keep a small production.
Okay. Okay, well, that's interesting. And you said they've always been in the drinks trade.
Yes.
In Belgium. Were they importers, merchants? What were they doing?
Importers. And they also had a range, which we still have, of wine-based aperitifs.
Oh, okay.
And nowadays, so the company is one of the biggest wine companies in Belgium.
Is it really?
Yes.
What's
we're,
it called?
Rabovin, which we are also the suppliers of the Belgian court. So
uh-huh.
The courthouse is drinking our wines,
yeah.
Chateau La Croisie.
Is that the when you say courthouse, you mean the judges?
The king.
No, okay, so not a tipple for the judges when they're...
No.
Okay, so the Belgian king.
Yes.
I didn't even know there was a king in Belgium, was
there? Yes, it is. We always had a king. We just changed.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we had to renew our status of supplier, but mm-hmm. so he... We got that.
Excellent. How many people do you employ in Bordeaux?
In Bordeaux, on the total of our 5 properties, we must be 20, 25 people.
For 50 hectares. I was talking to Chateau Palmer and they said, you know, 1 person per hectare, I think, was what they were talking about in terms of staffing levels.
I don't think that's the case with us, no. But when I say 25, it's the people on the property, so in the vineyard and in the cellars, but also commercial side, because mm-hmm. we distribute all our wines ourselves.
Yeah.
So I counted everyone. Which,
And is that this distribution done through Belgium, or is it managed through Bordeaux?
Both. So there's a big part going to Belgium, and another part that... we do the distribution from Bordeaux.
Okay.
So we have two offices, yes. Yeah. One is here in Bordeaux, which is called De Moer. And De Moer is actually the name of my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rabovin in Belgium.
Okay, yeah, because on your website, it was talking about De Schepper
yes.
and De Moer as a sort yes. of the two families, really. Is it two families or?
No, De Moer was just the name of my grandmother. And we use that name because it's... easier to pronounce in France than the Schepper.
What we're going to do is we're going to taste some of your wines, and Jean-Michel will join us now. Jean-Michel, you've now joined us. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And you?
I'm very good. I'm very good. You're the winemaker here, or you're the winemaker for all of the wines.
Property from the family de Schepper, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, both in Médoc and Saint-Emilion.
Yeah.
We've got some Saint-Emilion wines here from the two Grand Cru estates. Do you want to just tell us the difference, what the properties are and the difference between the two properties?
Yeah. So we are talking about Château Tour Balados and Château La Croisille. So for the first one, often both of them are on the quite the same terroir, only the big difference coming on the blend, firstly. Mm-hmm. So we get most naturally mellow on this kind of soil. And 20% Cabernet Sauvignon, 70% Merlot, and 10% Cabernet Sauvignon.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to compare it, this kind of blend with La Croisille, we didn't use any Cabernet Franc inside the blend, only 30% at minimum from Cabernet Sauvignon, which is something very rare here in this
yeah.
part of the Appalachians.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, with this kind of soil, this kind of terroir, because most of this kind of terroir are very more cool. So normally it's much more difficult to get good ripe Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whereas in Médoc, it's a lot easier to ripen Cab.
Yeah, for sure. So it's something very specific, you know, for La Croisille. And one other thing is the aging of the wine. So like for two Balados, we decide to aging not so long as La Croisille. And we use so about 70% New York barrel mm-hmm. on each vintage, depend naturally on this characteristic of each vintage. And for between 12 and 15 months. Mm-hmm. And for Château La Croisille, we are using 100% New York barrel, all French, and all of center of France. And for that, we are using it, we're aging the wine about between 15 and 2 years, 15 months and 2 years.
So why the difference? If they're right beside each other, they look almost identical in terms of terroir. You've just got different grape varieties, but you could replace
the
grape varieties.
Yeah, on the place, naturally. You know that both of the property are very close. Only, like I told you just before, you know, we get a part of our vineyards on the high point of the Appalachians.
Yeah, yeah.
And 200 meters far away, we get only a part of our vineyards with 40 meters from the high sea level. So that brings, naturally, a big difference on the climate.
So how high is the top and how low?
105 meters.
Yeah, yeah.
On the south part.
Yeah.
On the east part is 40 meters.
Okay, so you got about 60 meters.
60 meters.
Yeah, so it's
difference.
About 0.4, 0.5 degree difference usually. Typically.
Yeah, for 100, sure. For
100
sure.
meters is normally about 0.6 of a degree yeah. temperature change.
And naturally, the humidity is much higher unders, mm-hmm. but on the top.
Yeah. Okay.
Almost in the autumn, for example. You can see on the place where we are, often some clouds is coming from the valley.
Yeah.
And all our vineyards on the down are totally plenty of clouds.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So you're getting a lot more sunlight at the top here, and
yeah,
it's
yeah.
a bit warmer. So is that why you're growing a bit more Cab Sav?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Okay, and because you've got the Cab Sav, you think that it can take the oak a bit better?
Yeah, and for that, for this exposition, we are trying to make some wine difference.
Uh-huh.
And we believe that on these expositions, more east and far east, it's very nice exposition to bring a freshness and to keep the minerality of our soils.
Uh-huh.
So in try to make something different of the wine that you can taste in all places.
Okay. Well, let's have a quick taste of the wines and just see. So the first one we're going to I'm going to taste anyway. you guys already drank yours. Yeah. It's the 2011.
Yeah. 2011, well, certainly for me, a vintage, naturally very difficult to come after big vintages like 2009 and 2010. But for my, for myself, I can compare it with a 2001, for example, which was a very interesting vintage, very ripe. The fruit was full body, but the tannin wasn't so hard. Mm-hmm. And acidity not so high at 2010, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
That means that the wine is should be then easier to drink earlier.
Mm-hmm. In 2011, you're saying it wasn't too hot.
It wasn't too hot. It was a cool years if you have to compare with 2009. Mm. 2010 was most fresh as 2009.
Yeah.
And we feel it on the wine tasting for me. 2010, for really, it's for me a king vintage that I never met during the last 20 years.
So it's your favorite one, is it? 2000?
It's my favorite. You know, we
that's why you didn't give it to me. You only gave me 2009.
Sure. No. You know, because, why? But for me, but we can test it.
No, it's all right.
But 2010 is certainly more difficult to test now.
What?
For example, Lac Brazil 2010, we blended not only with 70% Merlot and 30% Cabernet Sauvignon.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we decide because the we get it, we get the wine in, on the casks. We decide to blend it with 50% Cabernet Sauvignon and 50% Merlot. So, for sure, it's the wine that you have to taste it. Could you open it, Tony?
No, because it's cold as well. It won't taste as good. These wines, we try.
You should bring the bottle with you.
Yeah, I'll do that. But, we tried these wines earlier. And they were quite cold, and when we first tasted them, they weren't anywhere near as good as they are now. They've really opened up. They needed a bit of time, and also they were too cold to really taste properly and really enjoy. Because there's some chocolate notes coming through, and which you could sense as a toastiness when they were colder, but they're a lot easier to drink now.
You know, the wine is quite. Fine. It's only one year in bottle.
Yeah.
It's just 1 year bottling, so they're young wines. Naturally, on this kind of temperature, better to drink as before, 1 hour to 1.5 hours before. But so easy to drink. So it's a wine that you can drink a bottle alone, better than if you are with some friends. But you know what we are trying to make here is this kind of wine with freshness at the end. You ask for one other bottle.
Yeah. Some of the wines show more Cab Sav in them. For example, the 2008, when I first smelled it, it smelled slightly minty.
You tell me that.
Yeah, but now that it's warmed up, it is more cassis. It's more
blackcurrant. More cassis, yeah.
When it was cold, it was tasting greener than once it's warmed up. And even though you say it's only got about 30% Cab Sav, if I had to taste the wine, I would probably say it has more Cab Sav than 30%.
Yeah, for sure. I can understand what you mean. Only we feel in this kind of vintage, which is for me and for all of us, very interesting to test it because it's not so easy vintage to make.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are talking about 30% Cabernet Sauvignon in the blend.
Mm.
Quite crazy to make it.
Yeah.
It will be much more easier to make a wine in 2008 with 100% Merlot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But we are trying to keep away and trying to bring in each vintage, the characteristic really from the year inside the wine, all wines. Here we are testing only a few vintage. But if we test the last 10 vintage, you can imagine you can find the same spirit of the wine, if I can explain it like this.
But some of the wines, for example, I've just tried the 2005.
Yeah.
Tannins, quite a lot firmer, grippier tannins in the 2005 than the other wines.
Yeah.
And 2005 was considered a great year. Did you try and get more extraction from the wines in that year? Because sometimes in big years, they try and go for a lot more extraction and therefore think of it as going to give them more ageability.
We are trying to take all what the grapes want to give us,
mm-hmm.
not more.
Yeah.
2005 was very easy year. Grape was really fantastic. We get everything on the time that we were waiting during the summer. It was a little bit hot, quite good hot, and come the water, come raining.
Yeah.
And after 15 days, again water. It was wonderful, easy to make the wine. So everything were coming together. It was so easy to make the 2005. But, you know, come again for the, my 2010. I like very much the three vintage naturally 5, 09, and 2010.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite is still 2010. I'm sure it will be then in the future that you need 5, 6, or 10 years more.
So let's talk about the evolution of the wines. I've tried 2005, so that's, I've got a glass of it here, and that's now 9 years old. Mm-hmm. A lot of people talk about Bordeaux start, well, on the left bank anyway, and Margaux and Pauillac, they're starting to look drinkable at 10 years. Normally, something like Saint-Emilion, I'd expect them to be drinking a wee bit earlier because of the more Merlot in the wine.
For sure.
So when would you say the sweet spot is for the wines? And don't say 30 years' time because everybody says something along those lines.
You have to come back then to test it in 15 or 20 years.
Yeah.
But for sure, it would be then for vintage like this, to be then here. The big difference between old wine and the other wine producing in this area, the presence of Cabernet Sauvignon inside.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know that is the best guarantee to make a good aging Cabernet Sauvignon. More as mellow.
Yeah.
You know?
Because you get the color and you get the tannins from Cab Sauv.
On each wine that we test today, when you start with 2010, 2009, or 2005, or 8, for me, we can get a pleasure on each of them now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, now they're all drinking nicely, especially...
for sure. But it's a big difference between the one that we are making now and the one that we made 15 years ago.
So what is the difference?
Certainly the work that we made in vineyards.
Okay.
Because the grapes are more ripe. Even if we vintage we are talking about, we are working very, very hard in the vineyards.
Mm-hmm.
For example, 2013. Many people are talking about 2013. Oh, horrible. You cannot drink it. We are very proud about our 2013. The color are very dark. The wine is very fruity. A lot of freshness, naturally, characteristic of the vintage, but ripe.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about the harvest. Mellow were ripe. We were waiting our Cabernet Sauvignon, and we harvested it more as a since 15th October. It's really a very good example of the work that we make every year in the vineyards.
Okay. One of the things I noticed when we had a wee tour earlier was that in the barrel room, you had these really large barrels. You've got the normal barriques, and then you've got the big barrels. And I asked you, what's the difference between the two? And you said that you're doing them for barrel fermentation. Now, I don't know anybody who does barrel fermentation of red wines. You know, people talk about barrel fermentation of white wines, and it helps the oak integrate into the wine, and it gives a lovely nutty flavor, and that's all great.
Mm-hmm.
But red wines don't normally get barrel fermentation. So, first of all, why do you not normally barrel ferment red wines? And then why the heck have you gone down this route?
It's a long story, you know. It's speaking a long time ago. Firstly, by my parents' place, where we're using this kind of barrel for 600 liters. When I come here, we decide to try to make not only the fermentation, but the macerations.
Mm.
It's a big difference between white and red, you know, huh? We get a skin contact directly on the barrel, on this kind of big barrel.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, isn't it? You can't macerate the wines. You can't plunge the cap or pump over if it's constantly in a barrel. So how do you get the extraction?
Yes, we get it when we roll the barrel three or four times a day. But naturally, the extraction is very soft. You get a nice tannins, very soft tannin, nice fruit. Naturally, it's much more difficult to take extraction of colors. The tannin are soft, but the extraction is very natural extraction.
Mm.
If your grapes are ripe, then they could give you really the best things. If not, you don't get a nice color. You don't get anything like this. It's
I noticed the barrels were actually on rollers, which made the rolling easier.
It's not so easy. Naturally,
I know. I tried to push them, and I couldn't roll the barrels. And then you just grab them. You're a big hulking bloke, and you just roll them over. It's fantastic. But you don't do a lot of wines. Is it an experiment? Is it something?
It's beginning with the experiment. We were trying to make some wine with each different grape varieties: Cabernet Franc, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, and also yet Petit Verdot, because we planted in two Balados, two parcels of Petit Verdot now.
In Saint-Emilion, because Petit Verdot, you just made a crazy gesture in your head. Petit Verdot needs more energy to ripen than Cab Sav.
For sure.
And Saint-Emilion is probably one of the coldest places in Bordeaux.
So
have you replaced it now?
We planted it, on the good exposition.
Is it still the ground, or have you pulled it out?
No, we planted in other south positions, on the high positions of our vineyards. And we make the first vintage 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we make a cask from 600 liters bigs, and we decide this year to plant it one of the vineyards again.
Okay, so Petit Verdot up here is working?
Yeah. And then one of the things, we decide to, I don't know if you remember when we were working from Lac Rasil to Tobalados, we worked just across a little vineyard where only one row was totally correctly.
I saw that.
Yeah, and the other was quite cut in the middle of the vines, and we decide to graft the six different grape variety that we can plant it in the area for Saint-Emilion.
Okay. And what are they? What are the six grapes?
Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, Malbec, Petit Verdot, and Carmenère.
Carmenère, yes.
And we decided to plant enough row to make some barrels or some casks from 600 liters to keep each variety separately till the end of the aging. And then when you come back, you can test it. Something very interesting because on the same ground, you can see the difference between really two grape varieties, because the rootstock are totally the same. Rootstock are totally the same. It's only the grape variety then bring on the same ground, certainly something interesting. When you can test directly the grapes on each vine.
So Carmenere is a grape variety that is allowed in Bordeaux, but
More on the Medoc side, you know?
Yeah, but even there, people don't really talk about Carmenere.
For sure.
I normally think Carmenere is sort of a Chilean grape variety these days.
Yeah.
You don't really think about it from Bordeaux.
Because it's normally not very qualitative grape varieties.
Yeah, exactly.
Why? Because we planted maybe not on the best place for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing for Petit Verdot, same thing for Malbec. If you planted a Malbec on the Valais, you produce 200 hectoliters, 120.
Too much vegetation.
Yeah, too much. And then the beers come too big.
Yeah.
And you get too much juice for not enough
skin.
Yeah. But if you planted it on a rootstock very poor.
Poor rootstocks, some rootstocks give a lot of stuff to the vines.
Yeah, energy.
And then they go vegetative nuts, whereas you get some rootstocks that give less energy.
We get here on this kind of soil only between 20 and 30 centimeters ground.
Yeah.
So that means then we get the rootstock coming directly on the rock.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't enough a lot of ground to bring energy to the vine. And we choose a very poor vinifera, so Malbec clone.
Vinifera clones.
All of these kind of things brings a difference on the wine than they are later. Before, for example, Cabernet Sauvignon were planted in Saint-Emilion on the bad positions, only on the valley, because the people were afraid about the Merlot on the spring frost. So they decided to plant the Cabernet Sauvignon because they grow then later as a Merlot. They grow up later as a Merlot.
So they'll miss the frost.
Yeah, naturally. But they were ripe only 1 year for 10.
Yeah.
But we decide to plant it on the best position. It's totally different.
Yeah.
Totally different kind of wine.
Well, we'll see what it's like when we try the Carmenere in, what, 3 years' time?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. All right, then. I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much, Ian.
Thank you.